faith-filled finance. All major UK bank accounts. One app. Provision is built by Christians to help you steward what God's given you. Track your spending, saving, and giving in one place. Join the waitlist now at provision.money and get your first month free. That's provision.money.
Leadership File on Premier.
Welcome to the show which helps you lead where God has placed you. I'm Andy Peck. This week I welcome back Christian Zirko, who's the founder of the Dialogue Centre UK, a non-denominational Christian organisation that offers assistance to the members and ex-members of abusive, religious, political and philosophical groups, and to their family and friends. His work includes, of course, those affected by what we call cults, but also those in more conventional churches who've been affected by extreme, authoritarian and sectarian approaches. In our previous show, broadcast the Sunday before Christmas, we looked at how Christian leaders might be guilty of abusing their power. But we didn't get on to how Christians and leadership might seek to assist those on the receiving end of abuse, both within the church and in cults and sects. So Christian's very kindly agreed to return to be my guest. American-born, Christian has been involved in this ministry for over 40 years, working in the UK since 1976. So great that you could come back, Christian.
Well, thank you for having me back.
We'll see how we get through the questions this time. And that's not to suggest that that you are long in your answers, more the fact that we're dealing with issues that that need some unravelling and unwrapping. So look forward
you
to
it. You ask difficult questions.
blame the questioner. So, I mean, some listeners won't have heard our first show, so just maybe you could just remind us of your work.
Sure. I can summarise our work in six words. We call it recovery and growth after spiritual abuse. We try to address and remedy the effects of the three characteristics that are key to all spiritual abuse: extremism, authoritarianism, and sectarianism. Reducing life to simple black and white value judgments based on the supremacy of the spiritual abuser, who's superior to everyone else and always knows what's right. Authoritarianism, which creates a dependency upon the spiritual abuser. And sectarianism, which separates and isolates people from outside influences, from ordinary relationships, and keeps them from breaking free from their abuser. No. So that's, you know, that's in a nutshell what we do.
And I guess maybe a generation ago, people would have, allied that with particularly political abuse. But perhaps maybe we're more aware. Maybe it's social media. I don't know. But maybe we're more aware of this in recent years. Would that be the case, do you think?
I don't know if it's got much to do with the social media, but it certainly is the case that we are becoming more aware of the problem. Yeah. Back 40 years ago and more, it was considered primarily a problem of, somebody else's political system. Usually at that time, it would have been the Cold War. So it would have been the Soviet Union, China. But primarily, we were interested in what we called the cults. And by that, we tended to mean in the church, we tended to mean specifically the non-Christian religious groups that showed certain religious tendencies, to be extreme, tendencies to be domineering, and were what we considered a danger to our young people because they primarily targeted young people. But all that time, without noticing it, these other things were going on. There were the self-help groups, the healing groups, the New Age groups, the political groups were still very strong in the West as well as in the Soviet Union. So it's always been there, but we began eventually to become aware of the fact that even though these looked like different things, they were really the same phenomena happening in different circumstances. So extremism happens whether you're talking about an abusive spouse or an abusive political leader or an abusive pastor or an abusive rabbi or whatever, an abusive healer, an abusive self-help group leader. It's the same extremism. It just looks a little different until you scratch the surface and look underneath. And so over the years, it's become more apparent that this is, in fact, just one single problem.
Well, I would encourage listeners to get back to the show that we did before, which where we focus more particularly on Christian leaders and how they can, you know, unwittingly or sometimes deliberately move into the kind of areas of abuse. And we'll still touch on that, I'm sure, in this conversation. But certainly Christians in leadership and especially church leaders may on occasion come across people who've been affected by abuse. Are there telltale signs that someone may have been abused, and what kind of approaches may be taken?
Well, telltale signs. The problem with telltale signs is that they can be kind of contrary. You might get one person who is unnecessarily deferential, maybe a bit fearful, doesn't like to ask questions, stays in the background, hides in the corner of little groups. You know, you have a Bible study, and they're the person that never speaks, sits in the corner there, and just watches everything. But another person from that same group might have come through his or her experience being quite bolshy and rebellious and questioning everything and challenging everything and disagreeing with everything and asking for evidence and proof of things that that are fairly commonplace within Christian circles, but which this person wants to have demonstrated to them, because having been through the experience of being deceived once, they're checking to make sure it doesn't happen to them again. So signs can be misleading in that regard. I think it's really just a question of being sensitive to a person, no matter who they are. When we see a new person in our church, we just have to learn. They may be open about their past, but they may be quite cagey about it and not want to talk about it at all for a long time, because they want to know if they can trust you with what they say.
Sure.
So I would say that it's up to us in the churches to be proactive, to be sensitive to new people or people we don't know, even if they're not that new. If we see them suddenly looking uncomfortable, we need to take the time and the patience to let them get to know us. Sometimes we're in such a rush to get to know a new person, an outsider, as we tend to think of them, that we don't realize they've got to get to know us, too. They've got to decide, having been wounded already by trusting someone who didn't deserve to be trusted, they've got to decide, are we like that person who was spiritually abusive?
Yeah.
Because spiritual abuse goes right to the core of who we are. It goes to the core of how we see ourselves and how we live in the world, and it robs us of confidence. And it robs us of the willingness to trust people. So it's up to us, really, to be sensitive and let people know we're safe.
Right.
It goes back to what I said the first time around about being a good servant as an expression of Christ's love. Good servants aren't scary. They're safe people who will take care of you.
Yeah.
And it's up to us to be good servants, to be safe people who take care of other people. Hmm. So I guess what I'm saying is, it's not up to us to look for telltale signs. It's up to us to look at the person that we don't know yet and say, I'm going to treat this person as more important than myself. I'm going to do what I can to help them to feel comfortable, even if it means just being quiet and just giving them a safe silence and a smile and a welcome. And then take the time to get to know them by letting them get to know me. Because if I'm in the church and I feel like this is my home church, then I don't have as much to be afraid of as the new person who comes in and wants to know, what kind of people are you anyway?
Yeah, sure.
You see what I mean there?
Yeah, no, quite. I mean, within understanding of parenting and child attachment, there's a sort of syndrome whereby a child that's been disappointed in the past by a lack of attachment, particularly with a father or mother figure, mm-hmm. kind of builds up a kind of... the heart becomes hardened to feel, you know, almost sabotage relationships because they're frightened of the
yes.
similar thing happening again. I don't know if that's the sort of syndrome that might be described within this abusive situation as well.
Certainly some people come away from their abusive group or their abusive experience with that exact kind of feeling. It's not all that unlike what happens when a teenager has a really bad breakup with their first girlfriend or boyfriend. And, you know, all of a sudden, they go through this phase, usually it is just a phase, of saying, well, if I push you away from me first, you don't get the chance to push me away from you. And so they get a bit spiky in their next relationship until they calm down a bit and realize, well, that was just that other person. They were being a bit of a jerk, maybe, as well as me. And yeah, we'll just move on from here. But when you've been spiritually abused in some way, that cuts so deeply that it can take time to begin to decide whether you can trust somebody or not. And sometimes we can be so enthusiastic and so overwhelming that we actually frighten the people we're trying to take care of. You see what I mean there?
Yeah.
You know, I go back to Jesus. You know, Jesus, he's the good servant. It's said of him in Isaiah that he doesn't break a bruised reed. He doesn't quench a smoking flax. We don't know who these people are who are bruised reeds and smoking flax. We just need to be careful to get to know who they are, and meanwhile, to let them know us until they decide one day maybe to just say that little something to test us out and see, well, can I trust this person with my deep, dark secret? I know many ex-members who come out of abusive groups who say to me that they don't even know how to tell their friends what they've been through, and they want to.
Yeah.
Or they've just started dating, and they don't know how to tell their prospective partner what's happened to them in the past. And they're afraid that if they say something, they'll be alone again. And we have to, as God's people, we have to take that seriously enough to say, well, if we're the safe ones, if we take the responsibility to be the safe ones, eventually, if they're ready, they will tell us a little something, see how we respond to it. And then if we don't scare them off with our response or brush them aside or minimize their experience, and that's often the worst thing, it's so easy as Christians for us to say, well, it's okay now because you're here and you're a Christian and everything's going to be okay. That's not what it feels like from the inside. From the inside, it feels like, I hope I'm not making another mistake. And I hope these people aren't going to just run roughshod over me like happened last time. And I hope I can trust you to be gentle and to be kind. And if we remember that, it'll change how we treat people.
Well, you're listening to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Christian Zirko, who's the founder of the Dialogue Centre UK. We'll be back just after this. And welcome back to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Christian Zirko. He's the founder of the Dialogue Centre UK, a non-denominational Christian organisation that offers assistance to the victims of spiritual abuse and others. We were talking before the break a little of particularly of how we can, as church leaders, seek to help folk who've been in an abusive background, and actually it may take a long time before someone who's been through spiritual abuse actually opens up to us, and connection and friendship is going to be key as part of that. Christian, I mean, for some folk, there'll be a need for extensive therapy who've been through this?
Sometimes, yes. It really, what people need is on a scale. It's on a spectrum of sometimes just simple friendship, all the way up to therapy. Depends on what's happened to them. Depends on how they've reacted. I go back to what I said before, that you can get two people out of the same or similar experience who react somewhat differently. And sometimes that's to do with their previous upbringing and experiences in life and how they have coped with other challenges to their self-understanding. So sometimes, yes, they may need extensive therapy. I find most of the time, most people need to be understood. They need to be allowed time to think through what happened to them. They need to be allowed time, especially when they first come out, to put what happened to them into the context of everything else that's going on now that they're away from their spiritual abuse. Because as with child abuse, where the child grows up thinking this is normal and doesn't necessarily realize that being beaten for dropping a piece of toast on the floor is not normal. They may think that is the normal thing, or they may think that being shouted at all the time is normal, whatever's going on. And it takes them time after they grow out of that situation to realize, Oh, normal people don't act like that. My family was the freaky thing. My family was the damaging thing. Normal society doesn't do that. And in the same way, people who have escaped spiritual abuse very often find themselves thinking that they're afraid of the outside world because the outside world is going to be like they've already experienced, because that was normal. And it takes time to say, oh, these people don't accuse each other of doing bad things. These people don't tell tales on one another to the leader. These people don't shun each other. These people don't mistreat each other over little things. I can be safe here. It takes time to realize that what they experienced is not normal spiritual life. So we have to allow them the time. And sometimes all it takes is just being around new people who are warm, friendly, accepting, don't probe, don't question, don't interrogate. Simply let them have the time and the chance to grow into their new life and realize what normal really is. We don't take a newborn baby and hand him or her a briefcase and an address and say, right, it's off to work, your sandwich is in your briefcase. No, we nurture them. We let them take life quite literally step by step until they're ready for it. And we accept the fact that they're not grown-ups. Yeah. And it's the same thing.
Christian, the question about sort of discipleship and spiritual abuse, which I want to kind of couch carefully. Yeah. But church cultures vary in their understanding of how we help one another in our walk with Christ. So some cultures include accountability structures. And if you, for the outsider, they may almost border on what could be termed spiritual abuse. And I'm just wondering how you draw the line between a healthy support, which reflects God's loving care, and a culture that makes people feel really intimidated if they don't comply. Right. I'm sure you know the kind of, what we call, you know, we call this standard evangelical churches or charismatic churches.
Yes.
You must have done some thinking on this and reflection.
I have. And over the years, I have seen how easily a normal, healthy church can veer back and forth across the borders of what becomes abusive. And I've also come to notice that for some people, something may be more hurtful and more abusive than for other people. You know, it's a bit like basic training camp in the military. Some people absolutely relish the challenge. They don't like being bullied, which I think is being eliminated from the armed forces now.
Right. good to hear.
I think it is. I wouldn't say it always is, and I've certainly heard things to the contrary. But for the most part, they are trying to eliminate it. It isn't what it was 40 or 50 years ago, certainly. But some people actually rise to that challenge, and you know, they love the idea that they're doing something tougher and tougher every day, and other people wilt in that same kind of pressure, and they just feel overwhelmed by it. And I think this is where we have to remember a pastor is a shepherd. A shepherd doesn't drive his sheep. He leads the sheep. Because that's how the good shepherd deals with us. He doesn't drive us. Apparently, it was either D.L. Moody or William Sankey or somebody like that who said that you know the difference between a shepherd and a wolf, because the shepherd leads and the wolf drives. And I've never found a better way of distinguishing it. If somebody is being driven, they're in danger. And we have to remember that the shepherd finds and helps and takes care of the weakest one. The shepherd doesn't berate it or beat it or butcher it. That's the way we have to be with people. We never get so spiritual that we can say, well, I know what's right for everybody, and if you're not up to the mark, then you're deficient. No. We have to remember that our job, if we're leading people, is to lead them gently, to look after them, to encourage them, and challenge them when necessary, but to remember that we too are flawed, we too are faulty, we too make mistakes, we get things wrong. And sometimes we just have to take a step back and say, is the problem really them or is the problem really me? And if we were accountable, I would love to see churches that extend this new notion of accountability. And it is new because the church has ignored it for years and years, which is why we're having some of the troubles that are so public nowadays. If we extended our ideas of accountability to mean that a pastor, however exalted he might seem to be in the congregation, does have to answer to other people. There are other people around him who will say to him, "I'm not sure about what you did back there," and then won't take a pat answer or, "Well, I'm the man of God. It's up to me to make these decisions. Who do you think you are challenging me?" That has to be eliminated. The man or woman of God is accountable. We all are. We all have to stand before God, and therefore we should be able to be subject to one another, is the expression Paul uses. Subject to one another. The New Testament doesn't give us a picture of leadership, of somebody lording it over other people. That is considered, Jesus regards as bad leadership and not to take place among his people. And the apostles, when they write of it, they write of it as not to take place amongst God's people. I see somebody who's lording it over others. The scripture tells me that person is not leading according to God. So that's, you know, that's what I would think would really help us to remedy this, is to remember that everything is down to loving each other. Even in the matter of church discipline, am I disciplining out of love, looking to myself lest I too am tempted? Or am I disciplining because I find this person revolting and I want to punish them? See, discipline and punishment are two different words. They aren't the same thing.
Yeah.
So and people get mixed up.
Yeah, yeah. So a leader who's trying to persuade people in a certain direction, who's encouraging that might be okay. Obviously, some temperaments are going to bristle against any form of leadership at all. But there's a difference between that and someone who's driving things, who's intimidating people, who's making people feel that they can't be part of the church if they don't, obey the kind of approach that the leaders are taking.
Sure. And we do this in all sorts of ways. I mean, we don't necessarily declare war on the people that disobey our bright idea. Sometimes we just make out that they're less spiritual and we tell everybody that these are weaker people. Well, that's just as abusive, maybe more abusive. And we just can't be doing with that because it ignores the fact that we might be wrong. I'm reminded of the choice that Rehoboam had to make in 1 Kings in the early part of 1 Kings, I think it's 11 or 12, where after Solomon dies. And he had a choice of how to lead the people. And the older, wiser people came along and said to him, who'd been advisors to his father, said, lighten the burden on these people, go easy on them, and let them follow you. And then some young upstarts came along and said, no, you make it heavier. If my father beat you with whips, I will beat you with scorpions, is the phrase that comes to my mind here. Be even more harsh. Now, he chose to make it even more harsh. He chose to drive them. He chose to bully them into submission. It split the kingdom in two.
That's terrific stuff. Thank you. Thank you, Christian. Sadly, time's defeated us, but it's just time for you just to share the how people can get in touch if something of what we've been talking about resonates with them, either because they've been involved themselves or they need advice, how to help, and they need your sort of expertise. How would they get in touch?
Okay, well, the easiest thing to do is to go to the website. I'll spell it. It's dialogcentre.org.uk. If you get the spelling wrong, you end up at somebody else's website. But you can find our phone number there and you can leave a message. You can find our email and you can write, or you can find our snail mail address and write to us that way. And could I just say one more thing? Someone tried to contact me after the last show. We very nearly made contact, but we kept missing each other. You know who you are. please call back again. I'm still wanting to try and get hold of you, or write me an email so that I can correspond with you.
That's fabulous. Good. Well, I'm glad that the connection is potentially going to happen. So splendid. Well, Christian, thank you so much. As always, there's more that we could say, but we really appreciate all that you've said and your insights. So thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
So you've been listening to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck, joined, as I say, by Christian Zirko. Do log on to Premier's website and find archived versions of Leadership File. Go to the store and get a copy of my book, The Leadership Road Less Travelled. And I look forward to seeing you again next Sunday at 3:30. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to The Leadership File on Premier. Andy Peck serves as a tutor at CWR, a Christian charity whose courses and publications aim to apply God's word to everyday life. Contact him via email apeck@cwr.org.uk.